Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Dr. Carol Francis, and we are so glad to have our guest with us today. Our guest today on air is Fred Hahn. Hello, Fred, are you there?
Yes, I am here. How are you?
Oh, good timing there. I was a little bit concerned. How are you doing?
Okay, I think I just dialed. I was dialing some other number. You know, I don't know what I don't know
okay.
what I did.
Hey, I'm so glad you're here, and that's what happens on a live radio show here. Frederick Hahn, everybody, I want to introduce you, has written another book, Strong Kids, Healthy Kids. You have a passion, Fred, while I'm reading your book, that quite clearly is indicative that we no longer should at all put up with children being obese, overweight, or unfit. It's just not necessary, unhealthy, and it's just so easy to remedy. So walk us into your program. Let us know what this revolutionary program is that helps children become fit in 30 minutes a week.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say the word revolutionary because in a lot of ways, things that are revolutionary were really things that always were, for example, okay to do, safe, and very effective. So, for example, back in the early 1900s, even in the late 1800s, weightlifting or resistance training or strength training, as I call it, because strength training gives it a more positive tone, was commonly used to increase the strength and health of children. Unfortunately, way back when, women generally were not, recommended to do it. But of course, we know that that's just silly. what's that?
Thank goodness. Yes.
That's right. Thank goodness is right. Thankfully, through a lot of research that's been done recently by doctors. Wayne Westcott, Dr. Avery Fagenbaum, we now know, that's just to name a couple, that weightlifting not only is safe, all the myths you've ever heard about weightlifting, damaging growth plates, stunting growth, those are all untrue. In fact, the opposite is true. Weightlifting is powerfully effective for children of any age for increasing bone mineral density, increasing muscular strength, increasing muscular endurance, increasing resistance to injury, improving mood, and many other benefits that are associated with other forms of activity as well. So we know that, and one of the beauties of resistance training is that for obese children, resistance training is the only form of exercise that's been shown in research to make a improvement in overall body mass index and body fat. So normally where we would think, oh, the child is over fat, they're inactive, they need to be more active, that's not the case at all. In fact, research shows that obese children are just as active as their lean counterparts. It's not that, I know, and it's something that sort of floored me when I was doing research on the subject, and mainly I got interested in this because I have two daughters myself, and I did not want to you know, obviously the fate of so many other young children who have become obese and diabetic to happen to my children. So it's very important to look into this. So I know I'm rambling on a little bit. But
oh, no, that's what you're here to do. You know, you have a very interesting term you've used already, and that's the term overfat. And you explain that in your book, Strong Kids, Healthy Kids. Let's go into that for just a moment. That's an excellent term.
Right, and that's an excellent question. Overfat, I use the term overfat because the BMI scale, which is called the body mass index, doesn't necessarily tell us whether a person, a child or an adult, has too much fat on their body. So, for example, I'm 5'11" tall and weigh 185 pounds. According to the BMI scale, I am just on the cusp of obesity. Yet my body fat percentage is 10%.
Oh, my goodness.
And that's because
that's a good illustration.
Right, and I have a lot of muscle on my body, whereas some children are very heavily, they have a lot of bone density genetically. Their skeletons are large, and their body mass index might have them over the limit for body mass index, yet they're not really overfat at all. What they are, what children are not overweight per se, but over fat. So we need to know are they sporting too much body fat, not too much body weight?
Well, can I just take a moment? I know you don't mention this in the book that I could find, but you have mothers and fathers that are listening to you right now wondering if they or their children qualify. And then, of course, they can go get, you know, amazingly complex body composition tests done. But if you're not going to use the BMI, do you have another method or methods that you think would just alert them to the recognition that they are over fat or their child is over fat?
Well, yes. I mean, one of the things that you can really use is to take a look at your child's body and be honest. That
okay.
would be the fastest and safest way to take a look and see if, in fact, your child is over fat. It'll be obvious
okay.
to you, and you have
okay.
to be honest with yourself. Or you can do a waist circumference, and depending
oh.
upon the child's height, the waist circumference, and I don't want to get the numbers wrong, so I can't say right off the bat
okay.
what those numbers are, but you can look those up online, and that's another
okay.
simple test that you can do as well. But
okay. And that'd be recommended. Now, you mentioned also that weight training in your book is considered the same as strength training and resistance training.
Yes.
Can you go into that a little bit?
Sure. The type of exercise that we commonly refer to as weightlifting would be to pit your muscles against a resistance, whether you're doing push-ups, which would be your body weight,
okay.
or whether you went in, you know, when I was a kid, my father bought me a set of those vinyl barbells.
Yes.
You know, they were made of concrete inside, so you can use
yes.
what they call free weights.
Yeah.
Or you can go into a gym like a YMCA where they have machines. It really doesn't matter whether you use your body weight or free weights or machines. What matters is that you are using a resistance that challenges the muscles of the body for a period of roughly 60 to 90 seconds. So that
oh, really?
Yeah, so that at that point, the muscles are exhausted, tired, enough
okay.
so that if you attempted to do another push-up or if you attempted to do another sit-up, of course, in good, slow, controlled form, and we can get into that in a minute, you would be incapable. The muscles have run out of gas, so to speak. And we call that, and we tell the children, that's called reaching muscular success. So if you do push-ups, and you can do 5 push-ups, but you can't do 6, even though you bribe the kid and say, hey, you'll get an extra movie to watch tonight if you can do that 6th repetition, that 6th push-up, the child literally couldn't do that. And that's not unsafe. Reaching the point of muscular success is very important because it ensures that all of the available muscle fibers in those particular muscles being worked have been stimulated to become stronger and more enduring.
Interesting.
So again, weightlifting, strength training, resistance training, many names that are, you can call it by many names, but essentially the essential element is stimulating the muscles that are working to a point of deep fatigue so that a strength growth response is initiated.
Beautiful. And then you have this revolutionary process, which is about moving very slowly, which is safe. Can you move into that?
Yeah, well, there are, if you take a look at the sport of football, you know, many people love the sport, it's a great sport, but it's dangerous. And
oh.
it's dangerous because of the high force nature. And
okay.
the way you create high force is to move your body really, really fast.
Okay.
So when we're talking about safety, perhaps people who are listening know the difference between karate, which is very fast, very harsh, very powerful,
okay.
and Tai Chi, which is very slow, very controlled, and very
yeah.
focused. So we often refer to my system, which I call the slow burn system of strength training, as the Tai Chi of weightlifting.
Oh, interesting.
Right. So you can effectively and safely strengthen the muscles and strengthen the bones of the body without punishing the body at the same time.
Very interesting.
Right. And
now,
sorry, go ahead.
Please. No, please, go ahead.
I was just going to say the American Pediatrics Association and many other health organizations are always stressing that while strength training is safe for children, we know that that's true, how you perform your strength training exercises makes a difference, and of course it does. So if we're going to strength train a child or even an adult, we want to make sure that the way in which the method that we use is as safe as possible all the while being effective. So even if training with weights really fast and really quickly, which some athletic trainers advocate, and which I strongly, in my book, I talk about the reasons why parents should never allow their children to be put in athletic training programs or strength and conditioning programs where the children are being, I call it abused, but being asked to move very violently and very quickly with weights. I mean, that's how you get injured in football. That's also going to how you're going to get injured in weightlifting.
Got it.
You know, so the as I always say, slow and steady wins the race.
Wonderful. You know, one thing I really appreciate about your book, Fred, is that it's so usable. It's like a manual for parents. And so as a parent, I was going through it saying, okay, now how would I modify what my children do physically? And one of the things that I appreciate is your photos and the variations of what you offer in terms of exercise. And yet they're very doable exercise, both with weights and without weights.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I tried to make it so that the book could literally be, as you said, a manual so that the parent or the caregiver could actually be the child's personal trainer. Because the truth is that for strength training to be powerfully effective, it does not have to be complicated. It can be simple. It can be time efficient, and obviously it can be made to be extremely safe. I tried to keep all of the as I call physio babble and complicated physiological reasons behind it. Oh, I do mention some of it, but what I wanted to do with the book is get down to the nitty gritty, so the parent or the caregiver could get right to the program, understand the basic concepts, and start letting the child and the adult feel the benefits right away.
Well, Fred, can you give our listeners then a chance to be able to implement your program within 5 minutes after listening to this radio show, as well as pick up your book, which is advertised on the radio show? But you mentioned repetition, sets, and then you have a series that you strongly recommend. Can you walk us through a program you'd advise?
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, I'm not sure how many people are aware of the exercises that I'll mention, but, for example, one of the easiest ones to do is what we call the body weight squats, where you would literally just stand straight with your knees slightly bent, stick your arms out in front of you, straight out in front of you, and then you'd very, very slowly kneel downward so that your hips were, your knees were behind your toes, and you would slowly, in the count of five, let your hips go downward until you were slightly below parallel to the ground, pause, and then very, very slowly rise back up to that almost completely straight position, slowly lower back down to that below parallel position again, pause, and you would continue. So you're using your body weight as the resistance.
Okay.
You would continue that motion until the legs were starting to quiver and quake and were so tired that you would have difficulty, let's say you were on your eighth repetition, that you'd have difficulty rising from that eighth position again. And you can put a stool underneath the child's hips so that the hips can touch the stool, and then if they get very tired, they can just sit down. And we recommend that for adults as well, or a bench or or something of that nature. Push-ups are another good example. The child
gets
on their knees, puts the hands shoulder wide, keeps the back straight, and very, very slowly lowers their body down to where the forehead touches the ground. We put a little pillow or a towel there. Very, very slowly push themselves back up to where the arms are almost straight, but not quite. Very, very slowly. So rather than just thrusting upward and dropping downward, using a lot of momentum to aid the movement on the way upward and just letting gravity do all the work the way down, which does not stimulate the muscles as well, and which also produces too much force on the joints, by moving slowly and steadily, the muscles will reach a deep level of fatigue. And then you only need to do one set. Once you've reached that level of fatigue with the squats, with the push-ups, you then move on to the next exercise. And that next exercise might be the abdominal crunches. And then you would lie on your back with your knees up and put your hands in front of you. And then very, very slowly you're crunching your chest up towards your knees. Fingers go past the knees. You pause. And very, very slowly roll back down onto the shoulder blade. Without a rest, rise up again slowly, and do the same thing. You would continue until the muscles were completely fatigued, and then you would move on to the next exercise, which might be the shoulder presses, where you're pressing your arms overhead with either water jugs, a jug filled with water, and you can mark the weights on them, or light dumbbells, say 2 pounds, or depending on the size of the child, 5 pound dumbbells, and that develops the strength. And you would do that in the same way, and that develops the strength of the arms. The thing is that you have to make sure that the amount of resistance that you have is adequate to stimulate the muscles to grow stronger. And science tells us that that means that the resistance should challenge our muscles to that point of muscular success within about 60 to 90 seconds. So if you had a 2 pound dumbbell, let's say, and the child was doing an overhead press exercise to develop the shoulders and the arms, and they could continue to press upwards slowly for well past 90 seconds, they would probably need a 3 pound dumbbell or maybe a 4 pound dumbbell. So
okay.
Adequate resistance is required.
You have in here a quote that says, the heavier the weight or resistance, the shorter the set will last. The lighter the weight, the longer the set will last. And finally, the more you perform a repetition, the fewer total repetitions you will need to do in a set. That is kind of your motto, so to speak, or overall outline to being able to work with resistance and set repetitions. Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, all I'm saying in the book is exactly what research on the subject of resistance training tells us to be true. So
Okay. Very
little of what's in the book is actually my opinion. There are a few things here and there, the way in which we teach the children to do things, muscular success rather than calling it, you know, fatigue and things like that. But for the most part, the recommendations on the repetitions, the sets, the times, are all based in single sets, are all based on sound scientific research that will benefit both the child and the parent. You know, and I did want to say one thing about adolescent obesity. I know we had approached upon that earlier, but
right. The
thing is that it's very important for parents to understand that children are not obese, and adults are not obese because they're lazy. They're not obese because they eat too much fat. Obesity is a disorder of excess fat accumulation.
Okay.
And what that means is that why is the body storing excess body fat from the foods they're eating? We all know kids who seem to eat anything they want, and they don't get over fat. And then there are kids who just don't seem to eat that much, and they do get over fat.
Right.
There are children who are very active who are over fat. There are children who are not active who are lean.
Right.
So for us to continue to say, well, we got to get kids to move more, we got to get kids to eat less fat, as long as we remain stuck in that paradigm paralysis, we are not going to be able to help our children, and adults for that matter, become leaner and solve the issue of adult and adolescent diabetes. So we've got to be able to break away from that paradigm and ask ourselves the question, why do some people and children, adults and children, why do they accumulate excess body fat? Why is that happening? And the main reason for that is over secretion of insulin and or insulin resistance, which is usually caused by eating too much sugar.
Okay.
Now here's the thing. Sugar, of course, as we know, is soda pop. We know it's candy bars. We know it's Pop-Tarts. We know it's all those things. But what I think a lot of adults and well-meaning parents don't realize is that there really isn't much of a difference between eating a Pop-Tart when it comes to sugar, eating a Pop-Tart, and eating whole wheat bread or eating a bowl of oatmeal. So what we normally think of as healthy is really just sugar in disguise. We've been marketed to believe that these foods are healthy and these foods are not. But what we're missing the point is that sugar is sugar no matter what. When your body digests whole wheat bread or brown rice, it's no different than digesting a candy bar or a can of soda. Yes, a candy soda is not as a can of soda is not as healthy as brown rice, but that's not the point. The point is that when it gets digested, it's just sugar. And if we want our children to get leaner, we have got to stop the process of excess fat accumulation, which means we have to keep insulin levels low, which means that we have to understand that the most fattening foods that exist are sugars in all their forms. So when
it sounds like you're it sounds like you're advocating a low carbohydrate diet.
Well, low sugar diet, and if that means you're having to lower your carbohydrates, that would go hand in hand. Remember, carbohydrates are just sugar. It doesn't make any difference what kind you eat. And this is a paradigm paralysis that people have to snap out of. They have to understand that when they put, for example, a bowl of whole grain oat cereal in front of their child, and pour, which is a bowl of sugar, and then they pour skim milk on it, which is just liquid sugar, and then they put fruit on top, which is healthy, but it's sugar, and then they give the child two slices of whole wheat toast with jelly on it. Even if it's homemade jelly, it's just sugar, and then you put a glass of orange juice in front of the child because, oh, it's healthy, vitamin C, but it's just a glass of sugar. What you're doing just for breakfast alone is you are introducing in that breakfast that I've mentioned 70 times the amount of sugar that is circulating through a child's body.
Wow.
And that's just for breakfast.
That's startling.
Right. Now, some children have more robust internal organ systems, meaning they can handle that amount of insulin secretion, and some children can't. Sooner or later, though, they will become insulin resistant. The pancreas, the beta cells in the pancreas, can only spurt out insulin for so long. And that's why some children who eat a lot of sugar are overfat and some aren't. That's why some adults who eat a lot of sugar are overfat and some aren't. Some people smoke cigarettes and they never get cancer. But the fact of the matter is, smoking causes cancer. And eating a lot of sugar causes insulin secretion, which leads to insulin resistance, which leads to obesity and diabetes. And we've got to, with adults, let the buyer beware, but with children, it's no fair. We've got to stop saying, you know, the definition of insanity is if you're doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result.
Right, exactly. Does exercise have any impact on the insulin ratio?
It does. You become more insulin sensitive through any type of exercise, which is good. So when you do aerobic exercise, when you do strength training exercises, you definitely increase insulin sensitivity. There's no question about it. So children should absolutely be active, and they obviously should resistance train because it's really, really good for them, both for now and for later on in their adult years. But the amount of but how it affects insulin sensitivity compared to eating a low-sugar diet, it pales in comparison to eating a low-sugar diet. That's going to be the very best thing to do. And in my book, Strong Kids, Healthy Kids, I mention eating a real food diet, trying to keep the sugars low and the healthy fats and proteins high. So that's a very important component of Strong Kids, Healthy Kids.
You know, what's so interesting is that we're really just chemical factories, and if we're going to look at ourselves that objectively, we might as well do the right chemistry for our laboratories to work in the right way.
That's
bottom line.
Very good way to put it. I agree with you 100%. You really, you know, the late Carl Sagan said, science as a candle in the dark. And right now, so many of us are walking in the darkness. We're walking in our sleep when it comes to diabetes and obesity, when the science behind the cure for it has been with us. We've known what to do since the 1960s, and even before.
That's true.
It's just what gets popularized, because it seems to be true, is that obesity is caused by sloth and overindulgence in calories, and that is not the case at all.
I think that exercise and eating properly is not just germane to the way you feel about your body or energy level. Those are good enough. That's all you would need. But it is about mental health. And since I'm a psychologist, I always put this pitch in there, and I warned you, Fred. has a profound impact on anxiety,
indeed,
depression, stress, self-esteem, not only body image, but self-image, energy level, fatigue, and for children who are dealing with a lot of stress in our society, both academically,
sure.
peer pressure, high incidence of divorce and separated families, these children have a lot of stress in their lives.
Yeah.
The exercise becomes a vehicle of not only focusing on something quite different and being productive in your life about helping your body, but it is also changing those chemicals in your body to help you mentally. This exercising component of a child's life is vitally important. And your passion in your book is intense. I loved it.
Oh, thanks.
How did you move into having that much emotional passion? How can you turn on the passion side of parents that their child needs to be this well-trained body?
Well, I would say that you only get one shot at youth. And I would say that, as a parent, I think I can speak for every parent that's out there. There is no greater love than the love for your child.
Right.
It just doesn't exist. Before we had kids, I loved my dog, but let me tell you, it ain't even close. Understanding that and knowing, I think people often feel lost when they feel like there's just no hope or there's just no cure or we just don't know what it is. Like when, God forbid someone gets breast cancer, it's just no one knows what to do. How do we prevent it? And there's a lot, and there's ongoing search and money being spent to find that out. But when it comes to obesity and ill health and diabetes, we have the answer. There's no need to worry. And when we realize that that's out there, that can give a parent of a lot of energy and a lot of vim and vigor to go about altering the kitchen, especially, number one, and what's in that kitchen. It should be real food. I like to say if it walked, crawled, flew, or swam, it's good
to
eat. It's good to eat. Or grew. But there's no such thing as a bagel tree. No such thing as a pizza bush.
Live food. Eat live calories because that produces life inside you. Eat dead calories, it produces death inside you.
And you just have to, if a lot of parents say, well, it's so hard. My husband and I, we both work. We have to get up at 6. You know what I say to them? I don't care. That's tough. Tough on you. You brought these children into the world. You get up at 5 and go to bed early, turn off the TV, stop reading your novel so you can get up an hour early so that you can make that child bacon and eggs, or you can make that child, let's say, almond flour pancakes, which are high in protein and low in sugar, or you can make the child whatever it is that's real, whatever your child likes and you want. But if it comes in a box, if it's made by a manufacturer, more often than not, it does not belong in your child's body. And the thing is, it's actually cheaper. People say, well, it's so expensive to eat that way. I say, yeah, compare the price of a box of Captain Crunch to a dozen eggs.
Right.
You scramble up your kid an egg or maybe two. That's a lot less expensive than 2 or 3 bowls of that cereal with the skim milk and all the other stuff that you're done. And, we don't have any grain products in our house at all.
Interesting.
Zero.
Not even whole grains. Not even where the kernel and all of the encasement that has all those nutrients. None of that.
None of that. But the thing is what I've learned, that the only way you get the nutrients from the grains, even if they're whole, is if they're sprouted. And that's a real pain in the neck to have to do. But if you want to do this, you can. But it's a lot easier to not have to go through any of that and just feed the child some fish in the morning, some chicken in the morning, some eggs in the morning, some beef in the morning, like I said, some almond flour pancakes. In my book, there's some great recipes
from real
parents. And they're from parents who are clients here, whose children are clients here, who we've talked about, and they've adapted their kitchens and their diets to create recipes specifically for that. So none of the recipes that are in that book are from some highfalutin recipe book somewhere. They're all from real parents who are clients here.
They look delicious. I can barely wait to try the almond pancakes.
They're good. They're really good.
That's going to be a hit. How can we get in touch with you, Fred? I have some of it on my different site, but how can they get in touch with you? Call you, email you.
Sure.
Go to your gym.
I mean, there are many different ways. I mean, am I allowed to say my email address? Or?
Absolutely. If you want them to contact you,
sure.
Whatever way you want them to contact you.
All right. They can email me directly at F as in Fred Hahn, H-A-H-N, @SeriousStrength.com. And that's my personal email address, and I will answer each and every email that I get from any of you listening. I always do, and I always will.
Wonderful.
Or you can visit the website, which is strongkidshealthykids.com. And there's a lot of information there as well. If you go to seriousstrength.com, both of those websites, seriousstrength.com and strongkidshealthykids.com, have our number here at the gym. And we're in Manhattan on the Upper West Side, and if anyone's interested, and I'll offer this gift, which is anyone who calls in and heard your show and interested in bringing their children here, anyone who comes in will get a complimentary initial consultation and first workout for Strong Kids, Healthy Kids.
Lovely. And what's the address of your gym?
The gym is 169 West 78th Street, lower level.
Yep.
New York, New York, 10024.
Wonderful. Now we know how to get you. So when I come from L.A. into New York, we're walking into your gym, Fred.
Please do. Please do.
It's been delightful talking to you. I encourage everybody to go out, not only get this book, but contact Fred, but most importantly, help your children be strong, healthy, and happy. Best to you all. Thank you, Fred.
Okay, thank you. Bye now.
Bye-bye.